A little hello to Sanjay listening to us live in the United Kingdom right now. Archbishop James Long is our guest tonight, very special guest. He's an ordained exorcist, demonologist. We, you know, from time to time we have run clips of exorcisms, audio that sometimes is pretty frightening. This is a very brief version of an exorcism conducted on a Russian girl. Gosh, I would hate to be there. But somebody who has been there is Archbishop James Long, and he's next on Coast to Coast AM. Well, Bishop James Long, born in Louisville, Kentucky, graduated from Loyola University in Chicago, continuing studies by enrolling in a major seminary graduate school where he focused primarily on demonology and paranormal studies. He's our special guest for this entire program tonight on Coast to Coast, Archbishop James Long. Hello, sir. How are you?
Very well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Great to have you with us. How did you get interested in demonology and paranormal studies? Not something most people normally get into when they go to a school.
Yeah, you're right. It's one of those interesting moments of, I don't know, a lapse of judgment or something. No, I remember as a child, I've always had a calling for the priesthood since I was a little boy.
Uh-huh.
I remember in kindergarten, the teachers were asking us what we wanted to do when we grew up. And I told her, and then I told my mom we were at church. And my mom asked me what I wanted to do, and I pointed at the priest. And I said, I want to do what he does. And I knew this as a little small kid. And so I continued, through school, Catholic school. And I remember a specific dream. And I'm not really big into, I guess, dream interpretations. I don't know a whole lot about them. But I remember a particular dream that I'll never forget, and it's a recurring dream. It's something I don't share often. But I remember I was in my room, and I was sleeping. Mm-hmm. And this is when I was a kid. And I woke up in the middle of the sleep, and I looked over, and someone was lying on a cot. And I got up, and I walked over to this figure, whatever it was. And the figure had a white cloak on, like an alb, and gold sandals, and his face was very like sharp, like pale, kind of a grayish, and it was Christ. And he had the crown of thorns, and I looked down, and he had his hands on his chest, and I reached down to grab his hand, and his eyes opened. And he looked at me, but they were kind of a very dark reddish. And he said some vulgar things to me, you know, what are you looking at, that kind of a thing. And so I backed up, and then he got up. And I grabbed the crucifix from my wall, my first communion crucifix. That's the first thing I could think of.
Sure.
And as I grabbed it, I put it up to his face, and he crushed it. And as he was crushing it, his hand started bleeding. And his exact response was, is that supposed to hurt me? I died on the... And then he cursed at me again. So I ran upstairs. We called the priest, and the priest ran downstairs, and they did an exorcism. And as he was fading away, he was screaming my name, and I reached out and grabbed his hand for whatever reason. And then I woke up and I couldn't breathe. I was out of breath.
Who could blame you?
Yeah, it was. But what was interesting is when I woke up, the crucifix, and I still have it. The feet, where the nails were, was out, and it was across the room. So I just decided, well, you know, I have a love for God, and if I have a love for God, I also need to understand what's opposite of God as well.
Yeah, which is probably what you had then.
No doubt.
Shape-shifting, they take strange figures, but something like that obviously happened. Maybe to trick you, you think?
Well, I think to scare me. I think the closer you get to God, the harder the devil works against you. And I certainly think that my calling to be a priest was growing. It was never falling away. And I think it's a very easy way for the devil to say, well, this is what you're getting into. Are you prepared?
Now, you're with the North American Old Catholic Church, correct?
Correct?
All right, which is much different than the Roman Catholic Church in some parts. What happened? Why the split?
Well, what had happened during the first Vatican Council, which took place in 1869, 1870, There was the promulgation of the dogma of papal infallibility. So the Pope was declaring himself infallible on church doctrine. And there was a split. There were many bishops who disagreed with this belief. And so there was a split there because of that. For many reasons. I mean, we can look through history and see that there have been many popes that have made decisions that certainly were questionable, to say the least. So to say that, well, we have papal infallibility, a lot of bishops just said, no, we just disagree with this. And so that was one of the main reasons for the split. And then, of course, the church in Utrecht, which was the original split. And then you have old Catholic churches here in America, which I'm a part of, the old Catholic Church. So I get quite often asked about the validity of the old Catholic Church. And on my website, I do have a link there that explains clearly the official document created by that was issued and signed by Joseph Cardinal Ratzinger, who's now Pope Benedict XVI,
right.
Dominus Jesus, which clearly lays out that although there are churches that are not in perfect communion with Rome, they are valid by their apostolic succession. I can show my apostolic succession all the way to Peter.
Do you find yourself, Bishop, having to explain this a lot to people?
Only to those people who, are staunch Roman Catholics,
and they understand the difference, probably.
No, well, I'm a heathen, and and I'm according to them, I'm a bad guy, and you know I'm doing you know so some terrible things. But it's interesting because I always tell them every time they question, you're doing something bad, and et cetera, I always tell them I'm leading people to Christ. And just like in the passage of the Bible where the disciples ran to Jesus and said, wait a minute, these guys over here are exercising demons, and they're doing it in your name, and they're not a part of our group, so we're going to tell them to stop. And Jesus said, no, you're not. You're going to leave them alone, because if they're doing it in my name, they're with us.
How many members, priests, do you think there are under this sect here in North America?
Well, boy, that's a tough question. That's the one complication or complicated issue that we have with the old Catholic Church, because there is no one central force like Rome.
So you're scattered all over the place.
We're autonomous, and each jurisdiction is different. So each bishop has their own jurisdiction, and it's unfortunate because I will admit that there are some old Catholic bishops who are not well-formed, and that is rather alarming. However, I belong to the North American Old Catholic Church, and the bishops who are forming all of our seminaries are very formed.
Do you have a physical church you go to?
Oh, yeah. I have a parish here in Louisville, St. Christopher Old Catholic Church.
And you have parishioners who go there?
I do.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
We require all of our priests, deacons, whoever is under our jurisdiction is required to do ministry, some type of ministry. Now, you don't necessarily have to do parochial ministry. You may not want to do a parish ministry, and that's fine. But you are required to do some type of ministry, whether it be visit the homeless, visit the shut-in, whatever it might be. But that is a requirement.
Oh, sometimes that's better.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, parishes are important. They're very valuable, certainly with the community getting together and praying. But I tell you, Georgia, it's a lot of work.
It sure is. And I wanted to set the record straight. I wanted people to understand who you are.
Oh, sure.
And what this is. And then, of course, to get into this incredible area that you have gotten into that we have been so fascinated with for so many years. And that is, of course, demons, exorcisms. Let's jump ahead then. I mean, so here you are now. You're a priest, archbishop. You specialize in demons and exorcisms. Not a lot of people do that.
Well, we Southern folks down here, we do a lot of strange things. I do. That's something that I decided to accept the calling, and I do think that is a calling. I know Father Malachi had written and spoken several times about there. As priests and ministers, God calls us to serve in many capacities. And for some reason, I think God has called me into learning this field. as much as I possibly can.
Give us, if you can, Bishop, your definition, your overview of this demon world we're talking about.
That's a heavy question. That's a heavy question. Basically, a priest during an exorcism sometimes could become the perfect mediator, and that he, depending on the type of exorcism that we're talking about, the priest invites the demon to enter into his body, which is very dangerous, certainly incredibly dangerous. That's why you never do an exorcism by yourself, nor should you ever do an exorcism with people who are untrained. Because if that does occur, then you need to have someone there that can turn the tables, and now there's an exorcism that has to be done on the priest. So it's very dangerous. When we're talking about Satan, we're talking about the Lord of Darkness. So we're talking about pure evil.
And strong pure evil.
I tell you, from my experience, anyone who tells you that they are an exorcist or they performed exorcisms, I remember talking to this one priest who did perform them, and every time I talked to him about it, his face turned as pale as ghost. And I thought that was interesting. I paid attention to his body language, and he was incredibly stressed when he talked about it. And I never quite understood it until I participated in one. And then when people ask me, it takes you back to those memories, and it is frightening. Anyone who says it's not frightening, I don't think they truly participate.
Well, I got to tell you, that little clip we just played before you, I don't know whether it's real or not, of that exorcism of a little Russian girl, but I got to tell you, I wouldn't want to be in that room. Not with that screaming and yelling and voice changing going on.
That's pretty common. So when it kind of brought back memories when I was hearing that, it's just like, wow, that was a flashback there. So that's fairly common for a true possession. And so something of that name, if all you're dealing with is screaming, you've got a pretty good situation.
Where are these demons coming from, Bishop?
Well, the demons are surrounding us. I mean, they're all around. Demons are not just something that just pops up periodically. The whole purpose of the demon is basically the definition is one who tears with claws to divide, tear apart. So, demonic force, they try to overcome a person's intellect and their will, and they're surrounding us at all times. I think Father Malachi had it right when he argued that the proof is right here in front of us, when all we have to do is look around in our world and we see demonic forces at play.
Well, why do some people get possessed and others simply don't?
Well, because others open themselves up, such as playing with Ouija boards.
Oh, no. Oh, don't. You would have to bring that up. We're going to have to talk about that later.
I kind of figured you probably would want to chat about that, but I think because some people are more susceptible, meaning that they're more open or attuned to that, and such as manipulating or playing with Ouija boards. Ouija boards in and of themselves, now people are not going to understand this. Ouija boards in and of themselves are neither good nor bad. It's the intention.
As I've said, I've always said it's the person, right?
Yes, it is, but the purpose of the Ouija board. Now, see, we both understand the purpose of the Ouija board is to make communication with another force that's not that's currently we don't understand fully. And the problem is you can't manipulate what type of force comes through.
Okay, the movie The Exorcist, the original one with Linda Blair, was based on a real little boy from the East Coast. He ended up having the exorcism in St. Louis.
That's correct.
For years, I tried to do an interview with one of the priests who was surviving, and he just didn't want to talk to anybody.
No.
But what would allow why would a demon, or how could a demon, possess an innocent little boy?
Well, and that's a great question, but the one thing we have to understand is this young boy's name. First of all, he's a 13-year-old boy. His name was Robbie. He lived with his parents and grandparents in Maryland. What was happening is Robbie was very close to his aunt. His aunt frequently visited. I believe she was from Missouri, if I can remember correctly. She was a medium. She liked the supernatural. She liked to communicate with the spirit world. She was very New Agey. She did show Robbie how to operate the Ouija board, etc. And she passed away. And that was a direct effect on Robbie. And
okay.
It really bothered him. So therefore, he started manipulating with the Ouija board to try to make contact with her. And what had happened then is, unfortunately, the strange phenomena started occurring. And so with scratches in the house, loud bangs, foul odors. He was getting physically sick. So there were some issues going on, just, poltergeist kind of issues that the family had to deal with. So they took him to the Lutheran minister. They did a psychological report, et cetera, et cetera. And basically at that time, you're talking now about infestation. Because, you know, there are several steps of a demonic possession. And so unfortunately, he was at that level of
Well, his was dramatic.
Well, it is dramatic, and it is a true story. And, of course, Hollywood has done a lot of things to create the excitement over
sure.
it. And then, but there were a lot of things. I read the files, and there were a lot of things that actually did occur, speaking a different language, in Aramaic, in Greek, and Latin, levitation. Carvings appeared on his chest.
I think the hospital was called the Lexon Brothers Hospital in St. Louis,
yeah.
And they cordoned off, they barricaded that room where the exorcism was for years when that hospital was around, and I don't believe it's around anymore. And then what they did, Bishop, is they eventually sold off or got rid of some of the items that were in that room, maybe like a table or bed and things like that. And I'm told the people who picked those items up also had very strange things happen to them, too.
Yeah, I probably wouldn't have purchased those items.
No.
I think I would have left that on.
As a matter of fact, Hollywood should do an entire movie on the family that, let's say, bought the bed. You know, you pick it up from that exorcism routine. There's a movie there somewhere.
Oh, there's no doubt. I'm sure the Hollywood producers are listening to you and say, write it down. Let's go.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's go for it. So, but what you're saying is that little boy in Maryland played with the Ouija board. He opened up this portal.
Absolutely.
Did he invite them in, or was he just trying to find his aunt?
Well, see, I think that's where the intention is. I don't think that he was trying to invite demonic activity or forces come. I don't think that was his intention. I certainly believe that because he was very close to his aunt passed away, I think he was trying to make contact with her based on the lack of education he received from his aunt, meaning that you can use this Ouija board to contact those people who've passed on. Well, the problem is when you open yourself up to receiving certain forces, you can't control that. Now, there are some people who say, well, we pray beforehand. Well, that's fine, and that's good, but so does an exorcist during an exorcism. And at any time, if the exorcist is weak or falls prey to the demon, demonic possession could occur then.
How do you know if a person's just not insane, simply insane?
Well, and that really is one of those things. Before I would ever perform an exorcist on anybody, I would have to make sure that this person is of sound mind and body. And so they have to fill out a very detailed form. And I think, unfortunately, there are some folks who don't do that. That's a little bit of a problem for me. There are millions of types of mental illness, it seems like, that we're labeling, whether it be anxiety disorders, mood disorders, psychotic disorders such as schizophrenia, eating disorders. One of the symptoms of demonic possession could be an eating disorder.
In either eating a lot or not enough?
Well, for example, the Emily Rose, as you know.
She was almost anorexic, right?
Annalise Michelle was her name. She was born in 1952, I believe, and she died of starvation and just complete and total exhaustion. That's another story. I could tell you things that actually occurred during that exorcism that would put you.
Sure. I would like you to talk with us about that. We'll come right back. Our guest tonight, Archbishop James Long, Exorcisms and Demons on Coast to Coast AM. After Dark Newsletter, you get 14 issues for the great price of 12 by calling 1-888-727-5505, or you can also go online at coasttocoastam.com. And we're back with Archbishop James Long right here on Coast to Coast AM. What kind of training, Bishop, did you need to undertake to become an exorcist?
Certainly a lot of theology, philosophy, prayer. Of course, you know, demonology, the study of the demonology. A lot of it is preparation, spiritual preparation, for what the possibilities of that that you might occur. So obviously psychology. Though I'm not a psychologist, but I know enough to pretty much get an idea of whether or not the person just has a mental illness rather than an actual possession. So there's a tremendous amount of training there.
Did you have good teachers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, tough teachers. But it was very, it was stressful at times. And I think probably the most stressful times for me as far as going through the training is reading the files and actually seeing things that had occurred to people during a possession and just feeling horrible for them. I mean, the amount of stress and the turmoil that it causes, not only to the person who's possessed, but certainly the family members.
Yeah. All right. You were talking about Emily Rose. Tell us a little bit about that.
Emily, Annalise, she was a very devoted individual. Her prayer life was solid. Things started changing. We don't know a whole lot as far as why it apparently seemed to have demonic possession. We don't really know as far as what portal, what caused it, because her prayer life was very solid. Now, in saying that, at the same time, as I said earlier in the show, the closer you get to God, the harder the devil works against you. So keeping that in mind, if there was a moment of weakness, if there was a moment, anything like that at all, you know, they're going to simply take advantage of that. And what had happened, basically, her life, I mean, in 1968, she started having seizures, and pretty serious, and she shaking horribly, and this was out of nowhere. I mean, she was in wonderful health all the way up until then, and so they took her to the doctors, and I believe, if my memory serves me correctly, she was diagnosed with grand mal epilepsy. I think that she just had a lot of seizures, and they wanted to medicate her, and so they did, and in 70 to 73, I think 1970, 1973, during her prayer life, she started noticing a lot of demonic images in her prayer. So she was praying, and she just couldn't get these demonic images out of her mind. Again, we're looking for the possibility of schizophrenia here.
Right, right.
And so, but here's the issue. If the images were only popping up, and that was it, then you could probably diagnose this with some type of schizophrenic, some type of a disorder, perhaps, maybe. The problem is she started doing things that were completely out of line. Again, it could be schizophrenia. She would sleep on a stone floor. She wouldn't sleep on her bed. She ate spiders.
You say that alone would have got you put away, you think?
I think so. But that was the only insect. I mean, it was spiders, flies, ants. I mean, whatever she could find on the floor, she would eat. She started drinking her own urine. And the screaming that we heard early when you opened up the show, that was constant.
Just like that?
Yeah, that was constant.
Oh.
Now, I would say probably probably on a less level, because that is actually an exorcism that's being taken place.
Yeah.
So, apparently the voices that the parents are explaining are the voices were very similar in that they would change pitch from very high to incredibly low, to almost to a point where you have a machine could only play it, and so she would scream all night long. As if something was burning. So like this was in the stage where she was fighting the possession.
Is the individual aware that they're doing this while it's happening?
Well, it depends. Like for example, Robbie, the young boy, you know, the exorcist was made. There were several instances he had no recollection. And as a matter of fact, even Emily, there were times during her possessed stages that she was so out of mind And then the next day, she would go to school. And everything,
like nothing had happened.
Like nothing had happened. And she, in many cases, she couldn't remember it. She just knew that she was having this huge inner turmoil going on. And it got to a point, it was so horrible, that my God, this poor girl, they were doing exorcisms on her. They started, exorcisms in 1975. September of 1975. They stopped in July of 1976. Now, get this. They were doing 1 to 2 exorcisms each week.
That's a lot.
Exorcisms, they're exhausting.
They're exhausting for both people, aren't they?
Well,
both parties.
So bad. Well, I'll tell you, it got so bad that what had happened is during her prayer, during the exorcism, when she was in her state of mind, when she was in control of her intellect and will, she had ruptured her knees from her genuflecting. She was forced. For some reason, there was... The demonic force was forcing her down and raising her up, very similar to what was in the movie. And it got so bad that her knees completely ruptured, because during a prayer time, I mean, she would genuflect 600 times, excessively.
Unbelievable.
So it was pretty severe.
The demons that would enter her or the little boy or anybody else, do they have names? Are they named demons, or are they just demons from the other side?
And yes, actually, with hers, there was. She named the demons Lucifer.
We know that name.
Yeah, that's a scary one. Judas Iscariot, Nero, Cain, Hitler, and she also named a his name was Fleischmann, and he was a 16th century. He was a horrible priest. I mean, just a mean, evil person. And so she was calling out several demons.
So these demons were at one point, I guess, possessing humans, or they were humans at one point.
Well,
I mean, if you yell out the name Hitler or Fleischmann or whatever,
probably the demonic force that was over them, and she yelled out the name Hitler. And that was the only thing for me. When I read the files, I thought, well, that was interesting, because either A, the demon is trying to confuse the exorcist, or B, we might have some mental illness, because normally, if you have an exorcism and the priest is the first, you got to demand the name, that they will fight. Now they will fight with you, and they, because they don't want to tell you the name, because then once you know the name, you can control them.
Uh-huh.
And so they don't ever want to tell you, so they'll lie. I mean, they'll tell you your mother. They'll tell you your mother's name, or they'll tell you, if you're performing an exorcism on the person all of a sudden will just be completely chaos. Like you heard in the tape that you have, all that screaming, all of a sudden it will stop. Cold turkey, just completely stop. The person will look at you and speak in the same voice as a deceased loved one, and ask you to stop doing
stop, leave me alone, and then it gets to you emotionally, I
absolutely
bet.
Absolutely, and you cannot make eye contact, you cannot listen, you cannot, you just have to continue with the prayer and demand the demon to be quiet.
How many years you been doing this, Bishop?
I've been studying, actually, about 15 years.
How many exorcisms have you either participated in by, as the lead exorcist, or participated in?
I was a lead exorcist in about 8. I participated in roughly about 12.
Okay, so of the 20 you've been in, which is one of the worst? Give us that case.
It was a little girl, and she, at the age, a lot of girls like to, for some reason, do witchcraft kind of a thing. I mean, there's a lot of movies out. Like,
yeah, they think it's fun.
Yeah, they think it's fun, and so she got a little bit too involved with it, and so as we walked in, I had 3 other people with me. This was not in Louisville, and I had 3 other people with me who were experienced. And when we walked in, this was in October, and as we walked in, it was the room was just completely ice cold. And it was roughly, I would say, in this area, I don't know, maybe 60 degrees outside. And as we walked in, I mean, it's just like the refrigerator just came on. So it was completely opposite of the house. So as we walked in, she was sitting down with her mother. She was begging her mom not to go through this. She didn't want this to happen. And everything was calm, and that was fine. I introduced myself as well as my other assistants introduced, and then it just turned to chaos. She looked at us, started screaming. The voices that we heard on the tape were quite similar. So we have to have permission. It's illegal to strap anyone down without permission, especially an adult. So if performing an exorcism there's an adult, you have to make sure that there is a will and testament or a power of attorney, and that someone gives you the right to keep someone down. Otherwise, you're breaking the law. A lot of people don't know that, but there are some legal issues you're dealing with here. And so, of course, being a child, the mother allowed us to restrain her, and thankfully so, because she hit one of the priests in his face and completely shattered his glasses. She grabbed the other one by the throat, and so we had to restrain her. I mean, this was a small girl.
And what are you doing at this point? I mean, are you saying, get me out of here? I mean, are you so trained?
No, you say, get me out of here, and you're in trouble.
You are.
Absolutely, because that's a moment of weakness. We know going in that we're not dealing with a little girl. We know going in that we're dealing with some type of demonic force.
See, I've seen some of these Hollywood movies, Bishop, where the priest is in there, and he gets so scared he goes running out.
Well, that's the last thing you can do, because if you go running out, the demon is going to follow you. I mean, because you got to understand, the whole purpose of demons, the whole purpose is to separate us from God. The whole purpose is to destroy our soul. And so if they know that there's an entity who is supposed to be a priest, who stands before him and prepare for battle, and the priest runs, that priest is now marked. That priest will see, no doubt, that priest will see shadows. The priest will be reminded on a daily basis that demonic presence is there.
So we have to have exorcisms for demons who try to possess people, take them over, destroy their lives, grab their souls. Why don't we have the goodness part? I guess you would call it the angelic end. Why aren't they coming into people to make them better? I don't understand. Why is it?
I kind of think we do. If we look around, I don't think the world is so horrible. I think when we look around, there just the passage in the gospel this past weekend was about the Good Samaritan. And I think there are a lot of Good Samaritans out there.
Oh, I agree. I agree with that. But, I mean, why do you need an exorcist to fight off a demon possessing someone? Why isn't the other side taking care of it on its own?
Well, I think the other side is, and I think that's why a priest...
Through the priest?
I think certainly, well, yeah, because the priest is in persona Christi, in the presence, in Christ. They stand in Christ's image, fighting the demonic force. So I think when you have a demonic possession and you have a true exorcism occurring, you're not doing this by yourself. You are an instrument through Christ's power and through his name. When you are doing the exorcism, you are invoking the power of Christ. The power of Christ compels you. And when you're fighting the battle, you are certainly not fighting by yourself. The angels, Christ, it is believed that they are fighting with you. And it is a true battle. And that's why we need people who are trained, who are prepared mentally, spiritually, and academically to stand in persona Christi.
Bishop, can a person be possessed and he or she is just moving along in their day-to-day life and routine? They're not strapped down to a bed or tied up or they've got a priest coming to exorcise them. Can they be possessed and go to work and function every day, and those of us might not even know it?
No doubt. And Father Malachi even had said that as well. Absolutely. It's amazing. We have people walking amongst us who we would think are the prime citizens of the country, but yet when we look in the skeletons of the closet, we see some pretty horrific things.
Yeah.
Pretty horrific activity. I mean, just absolutely, disastrous.
Do they know there's something wrong with them?
I would hope so. I think even in Jeffrey Dahmer's case, when Jeffrey Dahmer was talking about his situation,
the serial killer to young people who might not know who he was.
Sure, okay. Sure. And when he was obviously he's a cannibal, but even when he said that he didn't like the part of killing, and he knew that was wrong, but to him that was the only way that he could keep that person with him forever, and so for him. That was his mentality. Now, that also could be a person who has an erroneous conscience, which means a person who believes something is good, but is really evil. Like, for example, Hitler. Hitler thought that eradicating the Jewish citizens was actually a good thing for Germany. Now, we all know that's insane, but through an erroneous conscience, he believed that his actions was actually good. Now, with Jeffrey Dahmer's situation, him actually killing his victims, it's a little different because he knew it was evil.
Well, do you think he was definitely possessed by evil, or was he just nuts, insane?
No, that's a really tough question. I honestly don't know. I would say anybody, boy, I tell you, it's one of two things. Anybody that can cross that line and harm another human being and do what he did to others, as well as what other people are doing to other people today in our world. I mean, killing people for shoes, killing people for if you bump into them.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, we live in a very hedonistic.
You cut in front of them and they chase you.
it's insane. It really is. So either A, they have an erroneous conscience, which means basically, like I said, their conscience is distorted, or B, we have some type of demonic infestation.
Are you concerned that the state of this world seems to be moving more toward the demons than the good?
Well, you know, I'm one of those people that when I turn on the news, I turn it off in 2 seconds.
Yeah.
Because everything that I see is all negative. And very rarely do we hear about the good that's occurring. And there's a lot of good. It is a constant battle between evil and good.
Well, I've never seen a newscast, Bishop, start with, well, the good news today because somebody dropped $5 in the basket of a homeless man. They never start with that. Instead, they'll lead with, the homeless man shot someone in his car today.
Yeah.
I mean, see, news unfortunately seems to be always bad or terror or something like that.
Well, we both know it's sensationalism,
yeah.
And it creates fear and panic in people, and they turn on the television, and obviously they live in this fear because we're constantly bombarded with images of our society, and it is dangerous. I'm not denying that. There's a lot of demonic work at play.
Now, 23,000 murders in this country last year. That's a lot of murder.
I think so. And when we devalue human life to the point where you bump into me and so therefore I kill you, I have now devalued human life to a point of nothing. Now, if that's not some type of demonic issue going on or certainly a mental illness, so either A, we have an incredible increase of demonic possession, or B, our mental illness has increased tenfold.
All right, I want you to stay with us, Bishop James Long, as we approach the top of the hour. When we come back, let's talk more about what you do in trying to bless people's homes, how to get rid of those demonic spirits from people's places. We'll also talk about the Ouija board. I want to get your input on this. And then, of course, we'll spend some time talking about the Waverly Hills Sanatorium in Louisville, Kentucky. This is an incredible story, and we'll spend some time on that. And then in the last hour, those of you calling now, hold off. We'll open up the phone lines a little bit later on with Archbishop James Long. I'm George Norrie. This is Coast to Coast AM.